What do you think when you hear this? All right, so it's classical music. It's quite pleasant. This would be good to study to. And, yeah. Yeah, it's... it's nice. You could easily imagine this as background music to some posh gathering of executives after, I don't know, a gala. But if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't really know what a gala is. But this is Bach, the greatest composer of all time. Good old Johann himself. Surely his genius shouldn't be relegated to the realm of ambient music. Although I have nothing against ambient, as you probably know if you've listened to episode 5 of this podcast. So let's move on, let's try something else. Maybe a solo piano piece would work better. Oh, okay, so this has a bit more drama, that do-do-do-do. Sounds pretty ominous. But what's happening here musically? Okay, so the YouTube description has a harmonic analysis here. It says, the counter-subject is derived from an inversion of the subject, and motivic cells are constantly repeated in double counterpoint. Well, that's a lot of words I don't know combined in a way I don't understand, so yeah. This is the dilemma of classical music. We either hear it as an unobtrusive backdrop, or when we really attempt to appreciate it, we're left feeling like uncultured swine swirling in a sea of jargon. And no composer suffers this fate more than Bach. We see him as this monument of culture. We listen to him if we want to look sophisticated. But what makes him so great, anyway? And how can we appreciate that quote-unquote greatness for ourselves? We're bringing Bach back to the 21st century. I'm Patrick Simpson, and this is Melomania. So, as always, let's get a bit of context. One of the most important things to remember, not just about Bach, but any composer, is that they were a person, just like everyone else. We tend to idealize these great artists of the past as though they were more than human, transcending us mere mortals to create godlike work. But Bach was just another guy, just doing his job the best he could. The thing with Bach, though, is that doing his job the best he could is way beyond anything imaginable by today's standards, or really standards of any time. Just to give you a more concrete idea of what exactly I mean by this, let's get into some more details about what he composed and why. So most of Bach's music was written to be performed only once at a specific event, like church services or holidays. For example, he was the director of music at St. Thomas Church in Leipzig, Germany, meaning that among other duties like teaching music and conducting, he had to compose new pieces every week for the services on Sunday. And these weren't little 5-minute hymns or anything like that. For a number of years, Bach wrote what we call cantatas at a blistering pace of 1 per week. I can't even make an episode of this podcast once per month. And it's not like this podcast is going to survive for hundreds of years and make my great-great-great-great-grandchildren cry or something.
He was under constant time pressure because he was writing a cantata, like, for the next week.
This is Dr. Kate Boyd.
Like a hello, my name is...
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. Hello, my name is Kate Boyd.
She's a professor of piano at Butler University, and she's currently working on Bach's set of keyboard partitas.
And so he would write it, and then he had all these people help be the copyists, and then he had to get the parts out to the musicians, and then he had to rehearse them, and then perform it, and then do the whole thing the next Sunday.
Each of these cantatas is at least 15 minutes long, and can last up to 45 minutes. There are multiple movements and distinct parts for a small choir and instrumental accompaniment, and he wrote an unbelievable amount of these.
Half of which were lost. but we still have like hundreds anyway.
There are at least 209 surviving cantatas to be exact. If we say each of them is 15 minutes long, that's over 50 hours of original music. And that's an extremely low estimate given that many, if not most, were longer than that. And then, of course, he wrote so much else.
And you have the Brandenburg Concertos,
which we heard at the beginning of the episode.
You have the B minor Mass,
widely considered to be one of the greatest musical compositions ever, and a pinnacle of human artistry.
You have all of the other instrumental suites, the cello suites, the violin partitas.
And then there's the Well-Tempered Clavier, which is a set of pieces composed in every major and minor key on the piano, adding up to 24 pairs of preludes and fugues.
And then he wrote a second volume doing the exact same thing. And so there are 48 of these preludes and fugues, which really form a cornerstone of the piano literature, the keyboard literature.
This is all to say that Bach was extremely prolific.
It's not like you have parts of it that are just like, oh, well, that's not so good. You know, this piece is good, but not so much that. It's all of quality.
And this, of course, is amazing, and one of the reasons Bach is so revered. But it's also one of the reasons he's so intimidating to casual consumers. And not only is there just so much music, it's all composed in a specific style that we don't hear often, or at all today. It's incredibly complex and layered, and it would require hours and hours of analysis to appreciate every element of it, so I'm just going to explain one concept that's key to understanding Bach. Counterpoint. All right, it's scary, I know. And this staccato I'm playing right now doesn't even have counterpoint. So yeah, it gets scarier. But this is a word that everyone who wants to really get to know Bach should know. So yeah, what is counterpoint?
You're going to cut all this space out, I hope, because I'm just, yeah.
Sure.
It is pretty difficult to explain without getting into the weeds of music theory.
Counterpoint. Okay. Let's put it this way.
But I'm going to let Dr. Boyd take this one.
I'm going to talk about the idea of melody and harmony, which is kind of what we think of, I think, when we think of music. So you hear a Cole Porter tune, and you hear the melody, and then you hear the chords underneath it. And even like the classical era, which came after the Baroque era, which is when Bach was writing, you have the music of Mozart, and you have, you know, famous songs like... Right. So you have a melody in one hand, right? And then you have the harmony as broken chords. That's not a melody. That's not very interesting. But if you put them together, so you get the combination, right? But in the Baroque era, what composers did was each line in the texture operates independently. So in the example I played from the Mozart, this chord part is dependent on the melody to give it any meaning. But in like music by Bach, what he does is we'll have one voice act independently from another voice. And so maybe the high voice in the soprano will be important for a while, but then maybe the low voice in the bass will become important for a while. And so that manifests itself in something like this prelude in G major. That's even more noticeable when he starts to write fugues, because a fugue means that you have three independent lines that on their own could stand as a complete melodic something of interest, but then you layer them, and so they're all doing their own thing, but then at any given moment, it creates a harmonic interest as well. So to finish, now it's in the lower voice. Of the whole being compiled or consisting of three parts that are all substantial, and they contribute to a whole that's kind of greater than if you just add three things together.
So there you go. To summarize, most music has one melodic line or voice, but to say that something is contrapuntal, or in other words, contains counterpoint, is to say that there are multiple melodic lines. That's what's happening when you listen to Bach.
When we take music theory lessons in classes, we have to like compose a fugue or something. And oh my goodness, is that hard. Bach had some kind of brain, in addition to his training and experience, that allowed him to quickly synthesize his musical ideas in and filter them through all of the rules of counterpoint in order to come up with music that like goes with all of those rules and yet is inventive and not just dry and academic.
So, okay, we've covered how Bach is so unbelievably brilliant, but beyond pure technical skill, what makes Bach so compelling after all these years? Well, Dr. Boyd has an answer for us that's surprisingly pretty simple.
It's just so beautiful. You know, I would say, in a word, I find Bach's music, for me, to be profound. And that is why I love to get up in the morning and play Bach with my morning coffee. You know, it's just like there's something about it that is very profound, and I feel like it puts me in touch with something that I don't otherwise have access to.
But then, I think it's also important to keep in mind that you don't have to experience this profundity for yourself every time you listen to a Bach piece. That's just going to end in disappointment. Instead, I encourage all of you to simply listen to one Bach piece, really listen, and just see how you feel about it. You can see if you hear the same genius that's inspired generations of listeners and composers alike, or you can decide that it's just not for you and move on to a different piece. All I want you to do is give Bach a chance and see him not as some distant god of music, but as the New York Times once called, a living, compelling presence. We're going to try this right now with a piece that Dr. Boyd is actually working on that struck me personally as I was researching this episode. It's the first movement of the fourth keyboard partita, which to me conveys this deep sense of majesty and joy. I'll play a few minutes of it, do the credits, and then play the rest of the piece. Listen for as long as you like. So, without further ado, here is Benjamin Grosvenor performing the overture from Bach's keyboard partita number 4.
Thank you.
Melomania is written and produced by me, Patrick Simpson. The pieces that I used are, in order of appearance, Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5, Fugue No. 16 from the Well-Tempered Clavier Book 1, and forgive my mispronunciation on this next one, but Die Elenden Solen Essen, the Sanctus from the B Minor Mass, Cello Suite No. 1 in G Major, Prelude in D Major from the Well-Tempered Clavier Book 1, Toccata and Fugue in D Minor, Contrapuntis 12 from the Art of Fugue, and of course this is the first movement of the fourth keyboard partita. Melomania is a production of 91.3 WHJE, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Carmel, Indiana. Thanks for listening. Wait, how do you pronounce Bach again?
Johann Sebastian Bach.
So it's Bach? Oh, I really messed up this one.